Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the News in Review, a chance to reflect on recent news events, both at home and abroad. This week, I'm joined by my most excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, and teacher Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, it's a pleasure to be here with the members of the panel. Looking forward to another rousing afternoon of give and take.
Are you back in teaching mode?
Tuesday is my last day of freedom, and you've got all this week, you know, clean the cobwebs, get ducked out the books, learn what the new rules are. There's always new rules. More rules about what you can't teach than what you can teach, and how to adapt, all that sort of stuff. And welcome the newbies, you know, to miss some of the olders. Time is we're retiring in droves because of the PDRS stuff. And look forward to Labor Day weekend, and next Tuesday, it's, you know, watch out for the kids on the streets, and don't forget, buses will be rolling.
So teaching is a lot like the NFL. They change the rules every year.
Except when it comes to pay. You know, I mean, it's the top, you know, it's teaching. You know, you hope the kids all had a great summer, and, you know, and they do come, everyone comes back with a good attitude, and, you know, wants to learn. It's just like I said, you're right, you know, just too many new rules. You know, some bureaucrats in Washington, and, you know, everyone always to think that, and I'm sure everybody walks in different areas and this and that, and each school district used to be, when I was growing up, and all of you guys were all growing up, each school district was different. I mean, just some taught creation, some taught evolution, some taught, you know, all sorts of great thought, whatever. But each school district was different to its own, you know, method. That's now been replaced by, you know, Washington. And it just always comes down to this thing that I hate to say, that we always talk about it, whether it's about the giant corporations or this or that, but even the local school districts are ruled by the almighty dollar. And, you know, how to cut costs and, you know, how to do things. I'm amazed, you know, what we're not supplied with, what we are supplied with. I talk to other teachers from all over the country, all over the world, through the Internet, and it seems to be the same thing.
Okay, Sam, hang on. And from Los Angeles, we have well-known psychologist Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, always a pleasure to talk to you.
That's what everyone says to me, Simon. Nice to talk to you as well.
Do you have any quick psychology rant for us?
Oh, my God, yes, but, you know, you have to get me revved up first, but it's always at the tip of my tongue. So let's stand by, audience.
Okay. And from New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show. I am so relaxed. I almost don't really care too much about the news this week because I had a great vacation at a lake and in the wilderness, and just didn't wander much from the lake and the cabin. And I am so relaxed and so mellow right now. So.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty certain we can fix that.
Take away my peace.
Okay, let's get started. Obviously, a hot news item this week is ISIS, or as the president would like to call them, ISIL. Not quite sure why there's a difference in the name, but they've ramped up their notoriety by beheading a U.S. journalist. Now, I will refrain from making snide comments about U.S. journalists. The killer, however, had a British accent, and I can assure you it wasn't me. I have not left Picayune for several years. This new item I see as maybe ramping up the U.S. interest in ISIS. Sam, do you have any thoughts on it?
There's too many thoughts. I mean, where do you want to start? On the, how it came about, what we're supposed to do, what our approach should be. I mean, where do you want me to go with this?
What our approach should be, I think that would be a good starting point.
Okay, I think that's fair. I mean, because a lot of people, I heard the news today. I watched a little of the cable news talking heads and, the troops and, and the drum beaters from both sides. You know, to sit for almost a year to the, it'll be a year to the day, Labor Day weekend, when the president was thinking about bombing Syria over the use of chemical weapons. And a lot of people stopped, from both sides of the aisle stopped that. And, there was all sorts of stuff about that, and we didn't get involved. That is now being thrown, and I think the president did the right thing. That's being thrown back in his face now, saying, see, if you would have bombed Assad, ISIS never would have started its grip, its role across the Middle East, so to say. I'm sitting going, how can people say that, And now they're talking about, and he's saying to people, we need to team up with Assad to fight ISIS. And I don't think that's a good approach at all. Assad is a brutal, brutal dictator. Syria is not free in any way, shape, or form. How he's been holding on is because of his friends in Russia, providing him with better weaponry. I think I think the rebels, use the word rebels, I put quotation marks up, 500 different groups, sort of like the group that's in Libya now, that if you saw what was going on, all the militias are fighting, and three militias gained up against another militia and took over the Tripoli airport. I mean, no one knows what's going on over there. It's all China before Chiang Kai-shek and Mao are just warlords. That's what you've got, warlords in Libya, warlords in Syria, of which Assad's the biggest one. I mean, what do you do? I mean, what ISIS did to that our fellow American, Mr. Rosen, was terrible. I did not even know up until he was murdered that we tried to rescue him and failed. I think that was probably a great approach. Too bad it wasn't pulled off. I think that was you think with NSA and our satellites and our military and the courage of our troops, and the brains of the Pentagon and the presidents and the cabinet, they'd be able to pull off better things like that. And I would sincerely hope that leaves there's almost 30 Americans being held hostage over there, and I believe one was freed today. And I guess the West has been paying unbelievable ransom money to ISIS, right? So I see why they're taking people hostage. If they don't get the money, they don't like what's going on, they're going to behead you on national television. Pretty crazy and gruesome. I would like to see special ops or our military go in there and try to rescue our kidnapped Americans. I'm not one of those people who says Rosen took his life into his own hand trying to photograph the wars in Syria. Plenty of people over the years and modern journalism have gone over to photograph, write, and record the plights of war and horrible things of that. And it really disgusted me when I heard that he was responsible for his own death because he was in Syria photographing the horrors of the war there. So to make a long story short, I would like to see us let them all kill each other. If they've kidnapped Americans, we need to try to best rescue them and do humanitarian aid like we did with the Yazidis and with other countries that helped us rescue those people. I don't like to say, I think we have to stand for something, and letting genocide take place is something we could not stand for. But other than that, trying to mount a full-scale war again into now the country known as ISIS, which is a country inside of Iraq and Syria, is just asking for more trouble, and, you know, and I just don't want to go back there again, especially if my son might be one of those people who goes there.
Gary, I know that, you know, your basic thoughts are we shouldn't meddle in other countries' affairs. Do you have any thoughts on this latest development?
I don't have really a lot of thoughts about this poor guy who got killed, in the sense of, you know, you go in harm's way, and that's a choice that he made. There are a lot of journalists that didn't do that, and he wanted to be in the action. And, you know, that's the freedom of choice, Simon. The idea of spending millions and tens of millions or whatever it is to get someone back, I think, is absurd, because, you know, the cost-benefit analysis is they're just going to use that to buy weapons to kill thousands and hundreds and thousands more. So I would never do that. It doesn't make any sense. As far as, you know, as far as our stance on what we're doing in the Middle East, excuse me, I do think that Obama has it right. I do think that, you know, who are we going to arm? If we were to arm people in Syria earlier on, they're just going to, that's exactly what happened back in, you know, 10, 20 years ago when Russia invaded Afghanistan. They just take the weapons and they use it against ourselves. And, you know, the way this thing is working out, we are now, you know, friends of Iran and Syria, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I think Obama is saying, you know, you guys duke it out. I think the whole world is kind of thinking, maybe hoping, that the U.S. will spend another $3 or $4 trillion and go into the Middle East. And Obama's not taking the bait. And everyone's just killing themselves. They're figuring this out. And I think it's a really smart policy if, like I've been saying the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think in the next few years, maybe a decade or maybe sooner, I think the developed world is going to come in unity against the religious extremists, and I think it's going to be a World War III, not in a conventional way, but I think it's going to be a concerted effort to really battle religious extremists that are violent, and I think that's what's going to happen. But I think we just have to wait and see as far as that goes.
And Bill, I'll put the same questions to you. What do you make of James Foley being beheaded?
Well, I read a story this morning about it was reported through Fox News and the I forgot who the other source was, but they were talking that the man who beheaded him could be a his last name was Barry, who's an ex-rapper from UK. Did you read any of that?
I didn't read that, but the talking heads were definitely claiming that the killer was from Brit.
They've identified him. He's an ex-rapper. That's how good the technology can be when they want it to be. You're right, Bill. He's a rap, an ex-failed rapper, and he's now a jihadist in with ISIS, along with thousands of others from Europe and the West and the United States.
Okay. And so his father was tied into Al-Qaeda from years ago, and that this supposedly is a get back at Britain and the United States for not supporting, both have that policy of not paying for reporters that are kidnapped and all that sort of thing. He's definitely seems to be making a statement. It's almost like he wants to see how far he can push the UK and the United States, and to try to drag us into being more involved in the Middle East. And this is, you know, this is a strategic move as far as they're concerned. They also have kind of an ace in the hole to say, well, you know what, he's even more extreme than we are. But they're really hoping that he eggs us into that kind of conflict. And in this case, I guess I'm siding again with Gary, that we really need to try to stay out of this. And, you know, again, he's trying to drag us in. And this is a movement. You know, we're going to have, you know, the anniversary of 9/11. We've got some of the other things that hold significant historical dates right around this time in the world, and I think he's trying to drag us in. That's just my gut.
Oh, okay. You mentioned something very interesting, that the business about paying ransom for hostages, that the U.S. flat out says, no, we won't. But several European countries do go for it. Gary, do you think that you know, we should try and persuade our European friends to stop that practice?
You would. I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know what kind of leverage we have in this regard. I mean, these are elected governments, and it's such a complicated situation, Simon. You know, it's heartbreaking, and the media and all these things, they show these things, and it's heartbreaking. And of course, you know, you want to do something about it. I mean, of course you want to do something about it. And again, it's we're so, you know, we're just so afraid, and we just, it's all based on emotions, you know, when we get into these things, and it's so tragic, and we don't want to get hurt, and if it were us, what would we do? But when you play the long game, and you think of, you know, where's this money going? What's going on here? What's happening? I think this is how we got in trouble in the first place. You know, it felt good, you know, in 2003 when Bush wanted to punch someone in the nose, because it just feels good. You know, we're going to do something. But I think you really have to think it through, and I just don't know what kind of leverage we would have over, you know, Germany or Britain or France keeping your money. If they can't figure that out, if they can't figure out where the money's going, I don't know what we're going to do that's going to enlighten them.
And Sam, should we pay ransom?
Well, I think it's not a government ransom. I think if you saw what happened, the company that employed him released an email where they were ISIS was asking for $132 million in ransom. So it was a private decision. I think in France, Germany, and Italy, the country has paid for the release of them, but also private citizens and corporations have also ponied up. I mean, if that company, you know, want a family had $133 million, I mean, they would have done it. I mean, let's forget how popular kidnapping was in the Depression by, you know, by Alvin Karpis and all those other people. I mean, they made a fortune out of it, kidnapping people. So, you know, and paying ransom. I mean, there's, you know, it's a good ploy if you can get the money. I, I don't think our government would start to do that because they kidnap more people. I personally believe that if our citizens are being illegally kidnapped, and I think they are. I don't, like I said earlier, I kind of disagree with you, Gary. Journalists have always had a right to go cover the story, war torn or whatnot. Vietnam, if the Vietnamese didn't go, yes, they've been killed by either friendly fire or in the wrong place at the wrong time, with artillery falling or whatnot, especially during the Tet Offensive, a bunch of them were killed. I think that's like Sean Ellison's son Sean that died killed during the Tet Offensive. He was a photographer at the time. So journalists have always been killed, but in a battle. Yes, they put themselves in harm's way. In that case, I can't disagree with you that they put themselves in harm's way. But to go out there and try and document what's going on, to get the truth out to the world, especially in Syria, where everybody was saying, he's got chemical weapons. No, he did use chemical weapons. No, he didn't use chemical weapons. Then you go on YouTube and all this other stuff, and no one could verify anything. To have some people out there trying to report the truth objectively, like he was, I think speaks volumes to his courage, and to do that is incredible. He was kidnapped in 2012. It's 2 years later. They did try to rescue him. I applaud that. Maybe they should have tried it a little bit better, but that just shows me how bad our intelligence is on the ground down there, that we don't have what it takes, just like we did before 911. We don't have what it takes. We built up this huge bureaucratic national, what do we call it, the Patriot Act, that gave us the, and all we've done is learn how to spy on Americans. All we've done with it is to militarize our police forces. It doesn't seem like we're taking the war on terror seriously enough anymore. And it was supposed to be fought with drones, which Obama's been doing. Sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss. So it's a technology. So when you get kidnapped Americans that could possibly be headed on TV, which I think we've seen, how brutal ISIS is and other things of that nature, you can take the battle to them with our special ops. I think we have the best. I know we have the best military in the world. I know we have the best weapons in the world. Heck, the terrorists don't even have an air force. We do. We don't have a navy. We do. We should be able to use our special forces, the Navy SEALs, whatever you want to call them, the special ops, and try to rescue. And then if you have to take out some of those kidnappers, you do. Maybe they learned their lesson that way. And they stopped kidnapping Americans. And the British should rescue the Brits. If the Germans want to, Italians and French want to pay their ransom, then pay their ransom. But that's how you have to deal with them. I mean, I understand why Israel, in their state, they don't pay ransom. When they get hit, they automatically fire back.
But didn't Israel release something like a thousand prisoners?
For one soldier, right. A body. I think it was a body of a soldier.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was a dead body, right. They released, as part of negotiations, the family got the body home for proper burial, and they released 1,000 Palestinians out of their jails. Right, you're right. Yeah, you did. But it wasn't a death, but the body was dead. It wasn't a ransom. The soldier had been killed already.
I thought he was alive, but...
You may be right.
I
remember once they did it, for the recovery of the body or the body itself, and you may be right about that, and that's, you're right. I think it's the both sides, what are we going to do? We pay $132 million? That's quarterback money, we're not going to do that. I mean, the fact that they asked for that type of money, the fact that they were emailing his parents, did you realize that?
Yes.
They were emailing his parents. I mean, it's just, so obviously, our guys, the feds, the FBI, they had to have tracking of them somewhere, somehow. They probably got them, taking cell phones of them, for crying out loud. The ISIS guys, but the fact that they could identify who the murderer is right now and get verification of that shows how good our technology can be when they want to be. But I really believe we have taken our eye off the the Pentagon and everybody else, the CIA and everybody else, and the focus has been on domestic spying, beefing up the police forces, and not looking after and letting all these terrorist groups go unchecked. Although I can't call ISIS a terrorist group anymore. ISIS is now a country. They are a country. They've declared themselves a country. They've got their own, everyone knows what they're about. They just took over the last, I don't know where, today they took over a giant military installation in Syria. They've got more tanks and helicopters. Now they have the Air Force. They've got some airplanes. Assad's forces lost while we were focusing on them in Iraq. The other wing of the army ran a threat to Syria. And that leads to what I saw today, McCain, the neocon drum beaters saying, we got to team up with Assad and go after ISIS. It's mind-boggling if that's coming out of anybody's mouth in Washington. And I think what we've all, seems to be a small group consensus that we should, and I, on the panel today, is let them all kill each other. So let's get our Americans out of there. Now, if you have to stop Americans from going in there, well, I mean, they can do that. I mean, I guess they could put a ban on travel, and then Mr. Rosen or anybody else can't go. But no matter how good your heart is, you can't cause some atrocities or a war or anything of that nature, you can't go. And maybe we should have a ban on travel for these hot spots until they're taken care of. And I just think, let them kill each other. It's sad. The military industrial complex is loving this, boys. They are, Syria is helping Russia balance the trade. Iran, ISIS is grabbing all our old weapons. They still got to buy bullets. Someone's selling them ammunition, right?
Right.
They take over one of our tanks, and they're going to eventually run out of ammo. Who's selling them new missiles? And cannons and grenades and AK, who's selling them all that stuff? Why aren't we putting pressure on them to cut the arm sales?
Sam, hang on. I want to bring Bill in and ask him a question. Is it time for us to consider action in Syria? Usual suspects in the GOP say yes, but of course they're the same ones that don't want to spend any money. I see Obama stuck between a rock and a hard place. What's your thoughts?
Well, I don't, Gary's been so well behaved today that I didn't really want to pick on him. But maybe I need to say something. I was reading in this California Journal of Psychology something about that the ISIS and the Republicans are really the same organization, but I really wasn't sure where that came from.
That was mean.
Say that one more time, Bill. I didn't get that. What was that?
I read an article in a California publication the medical journal in psychology about how ISIS and the Republicans were the same organization, and I wasn't sure where that came from.
That's funny.
I used to really appreciate the covert work that the United States and the Soviet Union and the Brits were all involved in. It's almost seeming like we need to figure out a way to get the terrorist groups to turn on each other. And, it seems like we need to possibly get our covert operations to steal people from various terrorist groups and present them to the other terrorist group and let them starve each other by setting ransoms against each other. And then if we could have some kind of an online, overstock.com or PayPal so that the fees can be exchanged. It's run by the United States, Israel, and the UK. Then we can make a profit off of going the prisoners back and forth. And because we got to do something. I know I'm a little off the wall today, but it just we need for the terrorists to turn on each other instead of on the other countries, because if all these countries in Europe are willing to pay, that's not helping the cause. We really need for the terrorists to somehow turn on each other and go
maybe creating a site, you know, eterrorist.com. A bidding site.
There you go. And overstocks. You know, if you have too many terrorists, you know, you put them on overstocks instead of on the regular site.
I love the idea. And Sam, do you want to start a new website?
I just think we should, you know, let's take a page from President Kennedy. Let's quarantine on sales into ISIS or whatever, or Syria and another part of the world. But there's too many countries, including our allies and corporations and politicians, getting ripped over. That's brought to war. But that'd be the right way to do it, because, you know, quarantine my weapons are coming into their hands. We could do that, you know, but we're not going to, because there's too much money involved. And, you know, so that's the scary thing. That's a scary thing, that we can't really, we cannot do that, because that's going to interfere with some company's profit and loss statements. And we all know the United States and then Russia and then North Korea and China and some other countries are making, you know, like they balance their trade deficit with arms sales. And, you know, until that stops, I guess we shouldn't be surprised at any of this, because, you know, and I think the best course of action is to let them kill each other off and try to get the Americans out of there and not let Americans go over there, you know, and just, you know, and that's it. That's what, you know, don't issue a warrant. Just say, that's it. You can't travel there. No one's allowed to go there. No Americans allowed to go there. Everyone is there and coming home, including our embassy personnel, including our little boots on the ground, a.k.a. advisors, and that's it. And, you know, and see what happens, you know. Otherwise, we're stuck doing, you know, we're stuck with, you know, these things that everyone gets surprised about. No one heard of ISIS except, you know, really, you know, I never heard of them until the summer. I thought it was a song by Bob Dylan. Simon, you said it was a river somewhere. I know it's a song by Dylan, but, you know, I never heard of them. You know, they're just one of many groups that were out there. Now they've got this power, and they're running a swat through, you know, Iraq. That's a mess. The president rightfully says, hey, Iraq better get their shit together, and then maybe we'll help them out. And they can't. Even with our airstrikes, we can't we can't help them. And I will say an interesting point. ISIS, the best thing that happened for us, the good guys, quote-unquote, is ISIS supply lines got very far. They were easy. They became an easy target. Now, after we put our Air Force has blown them to smithereens, they're now retreating. They're now going back to how they were fighting. You know, the last couple of months, they thought they got cocky. They had tanks. They were rolling out in columns. Well, you know, them carpet bombed them over the last couple of weeks, and now that, you know, they outran their supply lines. So that's an interesting thing. Now they're back to where they were, fighting back, you know, fighting, for lack of a better term, Indian style, but instead of hiding behind trees, they're hiding behind sand dunes.
Gary, do you have any comments?
I really do agree with what Bill said, but I think it's actually happening. I mean, back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s, when Iran and Iraq were at war, and Kissinger said, too bad, there has to be a winner. And, you know, they were literally killing, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of their own population, maybe even into the million or so. And, you know, so far what you see in that part of the world is, you know, all of these people are dying, killing each other. You see it in Syria. You see it in Libya. You see it in Iraq. You see it. You don't see it in Iran. And you don't see it in Egypt right now. I think what the lesson is for all of my Republican friends who were salivating back in 2003 when we decided to go into Iraq to depose a secular Muslim despot, is that in that part of the world, you need a despot. You need someone who will say, you know what, if you do anything, we're going to kill the entire village. So this is why you never had a car bomb in a in Iraq when it was very sectarian. There were very disparate sects and everything. So, you know, it's a very tough situation. I think globally what you'd have to do is let them fight it out and try to contain the wildfire as much as possible. I think at some point it might come to our shore in a big way, and we'll have to deal with that when it comes. But it's a very tough situation. And, you know, look, Simon, if you really want to get into the weeds, and it has to go with income inequality and a sense of desperation. And if you look at it from a very global position and not just from right, from what's right in front of you, it's a very complex problem that the more, you know, you feel, even in our country, the more you feel down and out, you know, then all of a sudden what happens? The preachers come in. Believe, you know, believe in this God, believe in this prophet, and you will be saved. And, you know, so it really does rile up people when they feel, you know, in prison people turn to religion a lot because they have nothing else. So it's a very complex problem.
Can I ask the panel a question and the moderator a question?
Sure.
So do any of you three think the threat of ISIS, as said by the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Hagel, is now a threat to the United States homeland and Western Europe? Not odds.
Well,
are they going to attack us in a 911 style type of attack?
What is ISIS, Sam? ISIS is just the name. If it's not ISIL, it's something else. It's some guys in a house in an apartment in Yemen. If it's not that, it's some guys in London. It's some guys in Qatar. It's some guys in Pakistan. You know, when people say ISIL, I don't know what that means. They're not going to send, you know, transcontinental missiles. They're not going to send warships.
Right,
this is about a bunch of guys. I'm answering your question. It's a bunch of guys.
To the United States mainland. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, well, of course, but it's not necessarily ISIL. It's people around the globe, whether they're in the Philippines or whether they're in Asia or whether anywhere they are in Africa. Whether they're in Nigeria, who knows? But it's the same thing. When people say ISIL, it's like a bogeyman. I don't know what Hegel's talking about. It's like they are a threat. Who are they? It's a bunch of people. There's a few thousand of them. I don't know. We're always in threat. We're always in danger because in this day and age, with technology, with the Internet, with the transfer of money and everything else, we are always in danger. I certainly thought that after 9/11 there's going to be a lot of bombs and malls and baseball games and so forth. So we've done a pretty good job, but I don't think it's going to go on forever. It's going to happen. Hopefully when it does happen, we don't have the incredible overreaction that we had with 9/11. Hopefully we could be smart about it and we could figure it out and not always do a guillotine for a headache. Not that 9/11 was a headache. Pardon my analogy, but it's just, we just have to be smart. ISIL, I don't know what that means. That sounds, and I think that scares people when people say that. I think it really scares people. Really, it's about people in an apartment somewhere
well,
trying to figure shit
people,
out.
When they're beheading live people, you should be scared. They are as bad as they come, in the most recent terrorist groups or terrorist countries, whatever you want to say.
They're as bad as they come, but they're on monkey bars. They're on monkey bars going over in the middle of the desert. Now they have some spy, but they're not going to bring them here.
Well,
think about it.
I wanted to ask you. I want to ask you what Bill and Simon said. I mean, I don't.
No,
think
it doesn't concern me.
I don't think they have. What was that movie with the Russians had? It was a great movie in the 70s. Where the Russians had planted all these unassuming Americans when they would get a phone call that said something, a quote from a Thomas Wolfe novel, the mechanism went off. It was sort of a play on the Manchurian candidate, and the person went out and committed a crime. And Charles Bronson had to go, with the CIA agent who had to track them all down. It was a great movie. I mean, are there cells like does ISIS? Because that's the bad guy on the block right now, Gary. That's why I bring that name up. Do they have cells that people should be afraid of in America and Europe? That's what they're trying to sell us right now. And I'm just curious what the panel thinks.
Yes, I do remember the movie. And in fact, there was another movie. It was based on a story by Frederick Forsyth,
right,
about smuggling an atom bomb into England. I can't remember the title of it, but yeah, the way I see it, ISIS or ISIL, whatever you want to call them, do have an interesting leg up that Al-Qaeda didn't have in 9/11, right? Apparently some of their members are holders of U.S. and European passports, which means no visas are required. So, yeah, they could come back and create havoc, should they care to. I don't know how much havoc they could create, but yeah, I see it as a potential problem. Don't you, Sam?
I'm waiting for Bill to see what Bill says.
Okay. I think that we're vulnerable. In fact, I think that in more countries we're more vulnerable than we've ever been before. And I think it's because of the thing that's driven the whole big business. It's always greed, it's always money, and I think that even if you don't have a designated sleeper cell, we have independent contractors all over the world who are saying, you pay me to do whatever you want me to do, I will do it. And I think that because communication is better than it's ever been, even if I'm not a even if I'm not Al-Qaeda, even if I'm not part of ISIS, I'm more than willing to take the money and to do whatever needs to be done for whatever you pay me to do. And it seems like it used to be that people had either good departed commitments and values, and they were driven by their convictions. Now it just seems to be on greed. So anybody could do anything for the right price, and you're willing to help them out as long as it doesn't really impact your piece of the organization. So, again, so the tentacles of whoever wants to hire a contractor in another part of the world to do your bidding, if you've got enough money, chances are that independent organization will act on behalf of whoever hires them. My God.
Bill, I want to applaud you because that's what I'm going to say. I think it's very capable to happen, but from a very different perspective. Simon, you brought up a great one about the passports. They don't need visas. ISIS seems to be money motivated. Bill, you brought up a great point. I think they're actually going to, they can buy people to commit. They have to pay people now. With Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden, it was a section of bringing back down the great Satan. That was it. And whatever, I mean, how many times did they attack the World Trade Center? Three times? once the bombing, and they tried another one. They attacked Symbol. They had this thing, you know, that they were going to bring down the great Satan, and then they'd be able to end that. And then I don't think they paid their people. They were there for the cause, the rebel cause that, you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. ISIS is paying people. They're recruiting people. They're getting they rob banks when they get it. When they take over a town, what they do is rob the bank. It's like the Nazis looted the treasuries of other countries and artwork. That's what ISIS is doing. They're sending another money for ransom, and they're getting cash on cash on cash. And I don't think it's because people from they worship the ground 13th century Islam walked on. I don't think it's about that. It's that they are dying people to come to their side and then probably to carry out terrorist acts for greed. Bill, I agree with you. And I don't know if I hope the people smarter than I am are looking at that too, because I keep hearing about ISIS has got all this money. And you never heard, no one ever said, hey, Al-Qaeda has all this money. They didn't. But you hear this,
right?
It's everywhere. And I think it's an interesting phenomena that needs to be looked at. Are they buying, are they buying soldiers to commit, people to commit jihadists? Saddam Hussein, in his heyday, Simon, correct me if I'm wrong, you might know, used to pay families of Palestinians who threw themselves up in Israel on the buses, like 15,000 or something. That was one of his things, wasn't it? Or am I thinking of somebody else? It was Saddam, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So maybe ISIS is buying people up. Hey, I'm going to we'll give your family a $1 million, and we want you to let off a car bomb in a mall. Because, Gary, you brought that up. I've always said, could you imagine if fill-in-the-blank terrorist attack ever blew up a high school football game, ever blew up a shopping mall, what that would do to the American economy?
One comment I have, ISIS seems to be very well funded and technically quite sophisticated. That scares me.
Yeah, they're not hiding in the Pakistanian mountains or compounds, are they?
No.
Blatantly out front. They're blatantly in everybody's faces right now.
Yeah.
And they're not hiding in the mountains of Afghanistan and Pakistan and in Anbar province. These guys are out there in the desert with no cover, taking on everybody.
All right.
Question, guys. They have to be well-funded for many things. One of them, which is to buy weapons and bullets and uniforms and all that stuff. Who's selling it to them? Shouldn't we be going after them?
Oh, absolutely. Now, let's take a step back and think about where this money might come from. Oh, you don't think it might be the U.S. government? Because, we send gobs and gobs of cash to everyone in the region.
Yes, I think some of the money is our tax dollars. I think some of the money is banks that they've broken into or business people. I think they make people pay a ransom if they don't, whatever they can. Money they're taking locally, money that's coming into them from their sympathizers, probably in Saudi Arabia and places like that. And they grabbed oil wells, so they're selling oil to people. And you're right, Simon, it's American tax dollars that they're grabbing, too.
Right.
Wow. Why? I just had a horrible, horrible thought. What if you created a problem in something like Central America in which you funded a certain amount of guerrillas to start taking children and inducting them into being guerrilla fighters. And then you came along and you went to Mexico and some Central American countries and you said, you know what, you got to get your children out of there. You got to protect them. We have a great plan of helping you to get to the United States. You put them up on trains, and you get them up to the border, and you put them in the United States. And then you go from your other people, and you go to Congress and say, hey, you know what? You got to stop that. You got to get Obama to give millions and billions of dollars to stop this horrible train going up there. Once you've got the money out of the hands of the Americans, you support your initial organization like ISIS, and you now have American money doing everything that you want it to do because you think it's to take care of all these poor, helpless children and families that are broken up, and you're just doing nothing but funding terrorist organizations. Just a horrible thought. What do you think?
I'm going to ask Gary for his thoughts.
Well, I think Bill is feeling rather frisky today, which is very nice. Look, I think, you know, it's frustrating for me because I'm always or often trying to get the global view of this. Two things that seem to fund a lot of these terrorism is petrodollars and drugs. And it just seems to me that Americans are a lot of ways lazy and short-sighted. If I wanted heroin and I would go down to the local pharmacy and I'd get a prescription and that would be it. I would take it and it would cost me $15-$20 and that's it. I'd shoot up and that would be the end of it. And we would take hundreds of billions of dollars away from narco states. The main crop in Afghanistan is opium. And, you know, you're talking about so much money. So much money. And again, Americans, we want to live in this little bubble, this little very sterile bubble about, you know, we don't want anyone to get on drugs and drugs are bad and we don't want anyone to be hurt. And we want to put me in an antibacterial condom so I walk away, nothing will ever get to me. And, you know, and the short-sightedness of our fear, which is based on fear. This is why we invaded Iraq, because we were all afraid and all this stuff that is causing us so much pain. I just, it's so, you know, little old me sitting here in Los Angeles, as I think about it, like, why can't we be smart? Why can't we just do the right things? All new construction by 2025 should be carbon neutral. CAFE standards for cars should be 100 miles a gallon minimum, and trucks. Get it, fix the problem. Sure, there's going to be a lot of crap. There will be some car bombs. There will be some things in malls and so forth. But the long game is you've got to take the resources away, stop being merchants of death and selling weapons to everyone around the world. Just simple things that to me, again, this is my little pea brain, makes so much sense. I just don't understand why we just can't figure this out and solve this problem. It's very confounding to me. It's very sad.
Okay, I want to move on to another story, unless Sam or Bill has any parting comments on what we've been talking about. And the answer is no, they don't. Okay.
Doesn't that mute button work really good, Simon, so that we can't answer? Go ahead.
Well, let's talk about Ferguson, Missouri. There seems to be a bit of an unstable peace for the time being, but I have a hunch that it's about to change. And I want to go once around the table with just a yes-no answer. Sam, is it going to flare up again?
tomorrow. I feel for tomorrow because I think it's his funeral tomorrow. And I think
that would
have been, you know when I'm a big Cowboys fan, not Dallas Cowboys, Cowboy movies fan. And I always, one line that appears in so many different movies, when the Indian drums stop, beatings of the drums stop, that's when you worry. The drum beating has stopped. It's too quiet out there, as they say in the Cowboy movies. And that's when you worry. And that's what I'm worried. And, you know, there's a huge funeral tomorrow for this guy, this young man. I hope it's peaceful. And that's it. And then, of course, we all know, I just got the feeling, you know, that I don't think the officer's going to be charged. And that's going to set up a lot of problems. And I may be wrong about that, but I don't think he's going to be charged. And based upon some of the stuff that's been leaked out, and that's going to be bad news. So there's two potential for the riots to flare up again. I hope not. Again, the best thing to stop these riots are for all these young people to have jobs. So instead of being able to walk around at night throwing Molotov cocktails, they're eating dinner and they're getting ready to relax because they have to get up to go to work tomorrow morning. That would really stop a lot of these riots and
that was a little more than a straight yes-no answer.
You know me. I mean, come on, how long you know me for? I do think that. I just hope there isn't, but like I said, it's just that with that phrase, it's the calm before the storm, and tomorrow's going to say a lot. I hope better cooler heads prevail. I will say that the best thing that happened is when they brought the militaristic, racist Ferguson Police Department and stuck them in the fire bat and withdraw the tanks and all that sort of stuff. That should have been done in the first place. But let the others talk, please.
Okay. All right. I'll try a yes-no answer from...
That's hard to get for you.
from Bill. Bill, do you think that it's going to flare up again? Yes, no?
Yes.
Okay. You see, Sam, that was the kind of answer I was looking for.
You love it. Yeah, Sam, come on. You said you told me to talk a lot. You had to fill it an hour and a half, and TJ and Peter went there. So shame on you.
Simon, I'm so glad you repeated the question because I couldn't even remember what the question was, but I was pretty sure my answer was yes.
and how about you, Gary?
Yes. Well, before I answer the question, Simon, you know, like in Jupiter, things weigh like 1,000 times more like than they do on Earth? Well, that's what happens when you ask Sam for a one-word question, a one-answer question. It's like he's on Jupiter, and he thinks, what's like 1,000-to-1 ratio? Anyway, yes.
Okay, the Michael Brown's funeral is set for tomorrow. It's going to be a public event held in a huge auditorium, and over 5,000 people are expected to attend. I seriously doubt that Michael Brown knew 5,000 people, and certainly exceeds, or probably exceeds, you know, his range of vocabulary, never mind people. Public event is a bad move, and I can't see anything good coming from it. Sam, do you think it's going to be a peaceful event?
Yes.
There you
good
go.
Good Lord. Good Lord. That was a one-word answer. Oh, I don't think there's going to be any trouble at the funeral. I'm thinking more in terms of the aftermath.
Yes. Yes to both answers, both questions.
Oh, Lord. He's gone one word on me. How about you, Bill?
Well, you know, here's a place for some people to make a little bit of money. If you got 5,000 people, you're probably short a few parking spaces and a few seats. So if I lived in that part of the country and I've driven through that area, and it's a bit rough. The best thing to do is to go down to your local Best Buy, break in there, get a widescreen, flat-screen television, and then set up these TVs all over your neighborhood and charge for parking and, you know, front-row viewing of the whole ceremony. And that way we could also be alleviating part of the economic problems from all that money that the neighborhoods can bring in. And maybe do a little bit of renovation. What do you think?
I have to say that I viewed that as slightly cynical. Gary, wouldn't you view that as a slightly cynical approach?
Yes, like I said, I think Bill has had a couple martinis last night, and it's still affecting him, which is good. I actually like Bill and his voice. You know, look, when you talk about the 5,000, you know, that he didn't know 5,000 people, you know, here we are on this podcast, Simon, and there's four white guys talking about this. And I think, you know, it's about he may not have known 5,000 people, but, you know, this is much deeper. It's emblematic of, again, if you look at it from a global position of income inequality and the difficulty with opportunities and the idea of, you know, it goes back to the O.J. trial. Sure, we all knew O.J. was guilty, but all the thing of jury nullification from all the years prior to that, it was just a chance to get back. And I think a lot of ways, a lot of people in these areas, I'm really not so sure what's going on in Jefferson and so forth, but, you know, there's a lot of people who just feel very hopeless. And then, you know, I think it's going to, there's a very good chance from what I've heard, and again, I honestly don't know, that they're backing the wrong horse with this guy. Like this kid who unfortunately was died, it may be that this guy really, the police officer actually did fear from his life, and it was an actual justified killing. But I think just people are so frustrated. And you know, when you go and you see what happened the last 10 years in Wall Street, where everyone just robbed the world blind, and all these people, rich white people, made hundreds of billions of dollars, stole blind. Now, if a black person comes up to me and with a gun and steals $50 from me, well, he's going to serve, you know, 20 years in prison. But you see these guys on Wall Street, and they steal hundreds of billions of dollars, and not one person goes to prison. It's just infuriating, and it feels it's the idea of the crack cocaine, the snorting cocaine. It's like people feel helpless. They feel oppressed. And maybe they're using this as an opportunity to, and I don't know if what's going to happen after the funeral, if these things are going to explode, but it's a problem. And if it keeps on going forward where fewer and fewer people have more and more money, it's just going to be a big problem, an opportunity for us. People are going to be less educated, frustrated, and it's going to cause, in my view, a lot of problems. So I don't know about this week when this poor kid gets buried, but I don't think long term. I think something really has to be done.
And, Sam, there's something that's been bothering me. The area that Michael Brown lived in had something like a 70% black population, 30% white, and probably not many other races. So the decision was made to hold forgotten what they call it now, jury deal. While this is most definitely a secretive matter, what has been released is the fact that 12 of the jurors, or 12 jurors in total, 9 are white, 3 are black. This doesn't seem like a fair situation given on the statistics. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I've been saying this from day one that that this whole notion that this community is fairly represented, the black community in Ferguson, is outrageous. I think there's one councilman who's an African American, 3 police officers, no firefighters, and the chief looked like he looked like Bull Connor, I mean, 2014 style. They acted like him, and then they were saying this stuff, oh, they can't pass the test, you know, and so things of that nature. Just mind-boggling, and I could understand the riots based upon that. And we've all been talking about the socioeconomic problem, and Gary, you're right on, spot on. Wall Street and the politicians, they're the ones who should be in jail, and all their money should be distributed to all the people who are living on crumbs. But that's not the way this country works anymore. And I think that's the biggest problem here. And it's obvious to me that African-Americans in Ferguson, Missouri, don't partake in the system, the election system. It's got to be one of the few communities in the 21st century that has a 2-to-1 edge in population with the flip side, you know, with the minority running the majority. I mean, you would think they'd be actively engaged in civics and government. And look, just on sheer numbers alone, they should run the community if they all went to the ballot box. Obviously, they don't. Is it intimidation? Is Jim Crow alive in Ferguson, Missouri, and it's somehow the time stood still there? I don't know. But it's a question to me that needs to be answered, and it's mind-boggling that the jury comes out that way, too. I'm surprised they're not holding the grand jury hearing in the Simi Valley. It's just mind-boggling crazy that they do that. It's mind-boggling that the governor couldn't get this the DA to step down. You know, who's got obvious prejudices, and his father was killed in a police stop. He was a cop by an African American. He has brothers, sisters, cousins, all Irish that served in the police department. You know, obviously he's got a bias. He's a human being. He's got a bias. Step aside, dude, but he probably wants to be the next governor. So he's got ambition. This is his baby. You know, and that's a problem. And it's just, and I understand the frustration. Even though I'm a white guy, I understand the frustration of lack of money on communities, lack of jobs, lack of opportunity. And it's the biggest, and it's gotten worse. It's gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better. We're back to the era of the robber barons and the politicians are bought and sold by them, and it's a scary thing. And that's why there will be, unfortunately, you got to lean in the direction that there will be riots tomorrow night after they bury them. Because how else are they going to get their words out? What, are they going to write letters to the editor? Are they going to call and talk radio shows? Are they going to... No, the only way they can get their word out and vent their frustration is rioting and looting and screaming and yelling, because no one's listening to them. No one's listening to him. I don't know if this officer feared for his life. I haven't feared enough for it. But I've got a question for you. Didn't police used to fire a shot into the air as a warning shot. And then maybe if you, instead of shooting them two times in the head, have two times in the leg to stop them. I mean, the chokehold that happened in Staten Island. Whatever happened to, not trying to, the police brutality is back in the norm, whether it's against whites or African-American. I've been stopped. And I've been arrested, and the cops, and I'm a white guy, and the cops treated me like dog shit, okay? And it was, and my civil rights were violated. I can imagine what it's like for an African-American. No, excuse me, I cannot imagine what it's like for African-American, but I know it's 100 times worse.
Bill, I know you've been on vacation, so you likely haven't been following this case very closely. But, grand jury is called, and we've got a, 70-30 split, 70 being white, the 30 being black, and yet the area involved is the absolute reverse. It's 30% white, 70% black. Now, I always assume that juries, particularly grand juries, were random, in their selection. Don't you smell a bit of a rat?
It's kind of hard to tell. On the surface, it seems like there's something wrong there. Again, I think the term you were looking for was change of venue. That's where you relocate to another part of the state or the country or whatever so that you feel like you get a fairer trial. The question becomes on whether or not the 70% white people are sympathetic to the situation on behalf of, of the defendant as opposed to the police officer. So that's really, that's saying that the white guys are going to vote white and the black guys are going to vote black. I don't think we're there as much. But all kidding aside, we went through here in Jersey the racial riots in the 60s, and the city of Newark was devastated, and it was all trashed and a lot of shootings. And the solution, again, we're back to economics, the solution for that was the promising to build some state organizations to build up universities in which they would employ the local workers, which at that time were predominantly black. So a lot of the reason the racial riots stopped in Newark in the 60s was the promise and the hope for them to obtain jobs at these at the universities and the colleges and at some of the state organizations, that the whole purpose and the whole negotiation was to provide them with jobs, which is really kind of the answer that our panel has been saying all along. Let's get the economy to grow in the right way with the peaceful type economics as opposed to big business and the terrorists and other people that just want to keep the war machine going.
Okay. And anyone else got anything else to add on this subject?
The only thing I would add is I think that Bill's just missing the point in the sense of when you look at historical issues and the history behind it. Again, here we are, four middle-aged white men talking about this. And, I honestly don't know what it's like to be a black man in the South. I honestly don't know. I don't know what it's like to see, so many of the people in your neighborhood doing, convicted of felonies for drug possession and stupidity like that. And when you have a white person or a person of privilege, a person of a lot of money has the same issue, they'll hire a very expensive lawyer and get off, and their life won't be destroyed. So
I'm not saying that the bill's not wrong in the sense that you could have a white guy, a white person who makes sit on the jury and make a fine decision, but I don't know. It just, the optics of it, the idea of it from an historical position are very, very tough. I don't think Bill's wrong, but I don't think he's right either. And I think I sometimes fall in the same place that he gets to. It's like, well, I think I would make a good decision. But then again, I don't know what it's like to have that kind of reality. Although, I do know what it's like when, you know, the real estate market happened and I got hurt in the real estate market and I lost a lot of money. And all these people on Wall Street who are still running the show, I'm infuriated. And that happened to me once in my life. But if that happened to me once a month, once a week, once every 6 months, my head would explode. Just would.
Good answer. All right. Well, let's move on. And I'm going to give the microphone to Sam, because this is his favorite subject, Israel versus Hamas. It continues to smolder. What's going on, Sam?
What's going on? It's the same old, same old. They get, the Hamas keeps firing rockets. They keep breaking the truce. They had a 5-day truce that looked like it was holding. Both sides were at the table. By the way, they were it was being broken by Egypt, who doesn't like Hamas either. And but it looked like things were going well. Then all of a sudden, 5 hours before the truce was supposed to expire, 50 rockets fell in Israel, and Netanyahu was going to say, no, you know, we're still not going to hold, and they fired back, and they targeted three top Hamas commanders, and they're trying to decapitate Hamas and kill other leaders, the military one. Meanwhile, today, Abbas, who's from the Palestinian Authority, co-government of Hamas, said he's going to present a peace plan that's going to be very radical, that doesn't call for the destruction of Israel. And he's going to be presenting that to the United States pretty soon, and wants less United States involvement and more United Nations involvement. So that's supposed to be. But meanwhile, Israel's going to keep pounding them, and they have to. Rockets are still being fired. Somehow, as hard as they've hit Hamas, they haven't destroyed all the rockets. Rockets and weapons are still finding, just like ISIS seems to have been a magnet for weapons in Iraq and Syria. Lo and behold, Hamas is a magnet for weapons in the Gaza Strip. And they keep getting them in there somehow. They keep finding the money to buy them, and they get them in there. And I believe Hamas is from the same tree trunk that ISIS is from, and Al Qaeda comes from. Militaristic groups that don't believe in equal rights for women, for homosexuals, for Jews, of course, for Christians. It's their way or the highway. They're radical Islam, and they're going to kill everybody gets in their way. They're going to force people to do things that they don't want to do. They don't believe in freedom. And obviously, they don't cherish street lights. They cherish, they value death, it appears. And they don't mind strapping suicide vests on and killing innocents who are out at a dinner party or out on or taking a bus to work or going to school or whatnot. And until that stops, until they start to value life, I think Golda Meir had a great quote, once the terrorists start to learn to love their children as much as they hate Israel, Israelis, that's going to be a lot better. It's something like that. It's got what you should quote up, and I'm sorry, Golda. But and I think what it comes down to that is that, how do we get them to do that? And I think it all comes back to this money thing. Gary, you're talking right on about Wall Street and the robber barons that did to everybody and got bonuses for ripping people off. How do we do that in Gaza? Well, I think, the money that flows into Gaza is not supposed to be going to terror tunnels, not to be buying rockets or weapons. It's supposed to be building hospitals and You know, maybe a seaside resort over there, right on the Mediterranean. It's got to have nature resort potential, you know, and things of that nature, you know, and it's historical, and but it's not. You know, look at the way, you know, and it's just not going to end until either Israel wipes Hamas out or Hamas gives up and gives up their weapons and whatnot, then I believe Israel and Egypt, acting in tandem, will lift that blockade that they both have on, and the people of the Palestinian people will be able to enjoy some freedom that they don't get under Hamas. But until they value life, they bring death upon themselves, and it's a sad thing.
And Gary, the Israel-Palestinian conflict is at best very, very complex. How can these two groups possibly, well, maybe not become friends, but at least working partners?
I don't know. I think you have, I mean, I honestly don't know, Simon. I think there's been a lot of very smart people that have been trying to figure out this problem. I honestly don't know. I think that probably you have to have some, I think you have to get religion out of the way. I think the idea of the Hamas idea that Israel has to be wiped off the map to do that. But as far as the, you know, what someone might consider an occupation or someone like that, it's very confusing to me. I mean, Egypt has a lot of land, and a lot of land that goes that abuts the Gaza. I don't know why you just can't move them 40 miles one direction and say, why don't you make this your home? I know that's very simplistic, but I honestly don't know. I don't know how it would be fixed unless a secular government comes into that area, that the population becomes so wary of getting pounded all the time by the Israelis that they basically just wave the white flag. I think maybe that's the only way. I think in that part of the world that extreme force is what they know. Like I said, when Saddam Hussein was in Iraq, there was peace. And maybe if Israel just hammers them, you know, continually hammers them until they simply wave the white flag and say, fine, we give up, whatever you want, we're not going to bother you anymore, just let us live in peace. Maybe that's the way to go. Anything else seems like it just hasn't been able to happen, but I honestly don't know.
And Bill, any thoughts on this subject?
You know, I always try not to share my thoughts if I didn't come up with some kind of conclusion. But there is kind of a parallel between Hamas and other companies and countries out there. For instance, I don't know if any of you are familiar with either Citgo Gas or Petrol Express, which is owned out of Venezuela. One of the things that they did to try to help change the view of Central America was to provide enticements to expand the people who have bought into the franchise for those particular gas stations. So they would help them. They would sell them their gas for cheaper. They would give them bonuses and helps for renovating their stations, and they helped people who were in trouble, who couldn't keep their operations going or needed some kind of a facelift. And they became very, very popular with the owners. However, the propaganda against them was that, you know, it is Chavez and there's a lot of, you know, bad things going on in Venezuela, and Venezuela and the United States are not friends. However, they did help a lot of Americans who were running those gas stations. I remember about 20 years ago, how Hamas came in to Palestine, and they helped rebuild hospitals and schools and people who couldn't get loans to repair their houses and keep things up and going. they got money from Hamas. They came and freely gave them and helped to improve their quality of life at that time. Things have all changed, but there's got to be some loyalty to them, because when nobody else would lift a finger to help them, Hamas helped. Venezuela, Citgo, Petro Express, all helped. And so what do you do about that? Is that just a bait-and-switch situation that was given, or did they truly have people's best interests in mind? And because of the economic climate, the political situation has changed that, where now they're not going to, they have to either become more radical, or they have to back down, or they have to go some other legal ways to try to increase their corporations. So obviously the oil company is going in a different approach than Hamas. So I just don't know what to do with that, because when everyone else had turned their backs on people who are hurting, those organizations helped. So what do you do about
it? That's a great question. And I think Sam's the ideal person to answer it.
I never knew that, so I learn something new every day on the show, which is good. Every week on the show, excuse me. It is. I think Gary used the C word, complex. I think that's not even a strong enough word to answer how we do this. But Israel is the only democracy over there that where people. Gary, I think you bring up a great point. All that land over there, tons of it. Israel's what, the size of Rhode Island, the fat? I mean, it's that big. And all those other countries are surviving. They can't find homes to the Palestinians. I mean, Jordan is the home to the majority of the Palestinian people. Yet they're second-class citizens in Jordan. So I don't know how you move them around somewhere, but I think your line about waving the white flag, I think it's going to have to happen in order for there to be some sort of peace over there. Maybe there will be. But still, about Hamas and Venezuela, is that Chavez Venezuela-led? Is that when Chavez took over Venezuela?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think they probably were funding things back and forth with one another. And meanwhile, Ollie North was in the basement cooking up stupid schemes while Mrs. Reagan was meeting with the astrologer and Ronnie was sleeping. So all that sort of stuff. But no, I mean, Hamas probably did it because they're probably trying to build friendships at one point. But Hamas, the terrorists, it's a terrorist wing of people. You know, they're no different than, we all remember, at least we forget Yasser Arafat. Used to hijack planes and get money out of it. And when he was thrown out of, even the Palestinians got rid of him, and he was operated out of Tunisia. I mean, they've been around. Wherever they've been, these terrorist groups have caused problems. We've let them go around. I think everyone's tried to do something. Smarter people than I have tried to. We've got these big problems with, why we didn't take out Yasser Arafat 30, 40 years ago, because he had the backing of the commies, the Reds, the Russians, the Soviets. So, we're all afraid of starting World War III. And all these little groups, Black September, Beta Meinhof gang, they've all been funneled by secret money that comes from somewhere for these groups to operate, whether it's Venezuela, whatever it is. And I believe that Hamas money bill was probably dirty money, or Gary called it narco money, or this money, or that money. It's not legit. And they get to do illegitimate things with it, and one of the things they want to do is kill people.
But as an individual, how are you going to say no? Are you going to say, where did your money come from when everyone has turned your back on you?
No. I think Gary brings up a great point. Him and I are on the same page. And legalize drugs, control it. That just wipes out a shitload of, that takes care of a lot of problems. Not all the problems. Legalize prostitution, that takes care of a lot of problems, okay? Especially white trade, white slavery, or whatever. I mean, but in doing so, if Gary, if I want to legalize marijuana in Ohio, which I want to see legalized, and control it and do all that, get swamp fighting. Well, the fundamentalist crazies who think that people who believe reefer madness is the truth, you know, you got those jerks. You have the police people who then will lose budget because they can't go fight drugs, along, of course, with the drug dealers. But there's a whole, you know, a whole cabal of people who are going to fight me and other people to legalize marijuana because the budgets are going to get cut for the most part. That's all they care about. And I'll go back to everything we always talk about. It's always about the money. And even though the big picture in legalizing drugs is a good idea down the line, but the big picture of that is far more meaningful in the positive for this world in the United States. Look at the obstacles you have to overcome. It's mind-boggling.
Okay, gentlemen, we're almost completely flat out of time, so I want to go once round the table and get everyone's parting thoughts or rants. You know, your choice. Gary, I'll start with you.
Well, I really it was nice today. It was fun. It's nice to have Bill come alive and see that.
Okay.
I had 2 minutes of glory there, and it's gone.
Gary dropped off the end of the planet, but he's back. Hold on. Okay, Gary.
Yeah, screw you. I'm sorry. That's not what I meant to say. It was nice to see Bill come alive. I really enjoyed that, and not that he's not alive other times, but it was nice to see him a little frisky today. I have no rants. You know, my rants are pretty consistent about, I think, of course, Sam is right. It's about money and the boondoggle and the prison guards and the unions and all this stuff. And it's, you know, look, the one thing I will say this, I'm very disappointed in someone like Obama. He's not running again. This is what needs to be done. A president on a second term, he needs to advocate for some things where he's not running again for the good of the country. And, you know, he may lose like Johnson did, you know, with the Civil Rights Bill. He may lose the South, or he may lose Congress for a minute or what have you. But, you know, put it out there into the world. Put it out there and say, let's legalize drugs. Let's do this. Let's get money out of it. And it would be a shame, and I'd certainly wish Obama, who did use cocaine, who used plenty of weed, you know, get these poor kids out of jail and release hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars to put towards better use. So that's my rant, I guess.
Okay. And Bill?
Yeah, I think we are all agreed that it is money. I think that what we want to make sure is that if we do release funds and we do allocate funds, that they don't go back into either new black holes that are not going to support and help America. We need to make sure that that money goes the right places. It can't be a presidential discretionary fund like we did with the banks and Wall Street. I hope that if we are able to loosen up the purse strings, that we will create something that will be an economic, strengthen our economy and help people become more self-sufficient because they got a better job, because they're making more money, because there's a equalization more across the United States. And again, not to sound like a socialist, but to truly help and educate people so that they can be better Americans.
And Sam, you get
Thanks
the last
great
word.
Great afternoon, you guys. I really appreciated it. Always fun. We didn't even get to talk about Ukraine. We didn't even get to talk about all those other things out there that need to be worked on. But I do want to say to all you celebrities out there, Richard Attenborough just died, so there's two more of you to follow. So watch yourselves.
Okay. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.